Live from Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. A strike by teachers is planned at Sacramento City Unified Schools tomorrow, April 11th. There is information related to the strike that you might need to know. Alex Barrios, the Chief Communications Officer for the district, is on the phone for a quick check-in with us. Hi, Alex. Glad you made a little bit of time today. So let's start with what's going to be open and what's not in the district tomorrow.
All schools will be open tomorrow. It's a regular school day. We do understand that some employees may not come to work, but we will have a regular school day. There will be classes, and it will be staffed with replacement teachers, administrators with credentials, and we'll also make sure that we serve meals for both breakfast and lunch, and we plan on our bus routes operating as usual.
This is a district with 42,000 students. I think that's a rough number, and 2,500 teachers. Is it possible some classrooms won't have a teacher tomorrow?
Well, it's important to note that about 900 of those teachers are substitute teachers, and we do know that we'll have some substitute teachers filling in tomorrow in addition to the replacement teachers and some administration with credentials. So we do believe that we'll be able to conduct a regular school day, have activities, and do the best we can to provide a productive and safe learning environment.
And just to repeat, services like breakfast or lunch programs, they will be in operation as well?
Yes, we will continue to serve meals, both breakfast and lunch. We know that we serve a population of students that in this city is 70% free and reduced lunch. 70% of our students are on free and reduced lunch. So it's incredibly important to keep our schools open and make sure that these students are getting nutritious meals and that somebody is there during the day to make sure that they are in a safe learning environment.
If parents don't send kids to school tomorrow, if a student is absent, how's that absence going to be handled or categorized, Alex?
Well, we are doing regular attendance monitoring. So that means that if there is not an excused absence, it will be marked as an unexcused absence. We have to do that because the state education code requires us to have 180 days of instruction. And so we need to make sure we keep schools open and continue to offer instruction, even through a strike.
Right now, this is a one-day strike. Is it possible it might last longer?
Well, we would certainly hope not, because that's not what we've been told. We were told that it was a one-day strike. We planned for a one-day strike. I think families and students and the community is expecting a one-day strike. And so that is what we have been told and what we would expect.
All right. And next week is school vacation week. So if the strike isn't resolved, in spite of the education, are the negotiations going to continue?
Well, we've said this before, and we'll say it again. We don't think the strike is necessary. There are a number of legal avenues and processes that the State Public Employment Relations Board has put in place to resolve these types of disagreements without the need for a strike. So we'll continue to pursue those processes and encourage everyone to come to the table and work things out.
I want to recognize the fact that I don't have the teacher's voice represented in this conversation, because we really just wanted to cover some basics. So let me just leave it with one more question. How are families going to continue to be updated on information? What's the communication system or the multiple avenues, Alex?
We've been communicating all week in all languages through all platforms. So our website has the most up-to-date information. That website address is scusd.edu. We're also doing direct calls to our families in multiple languages, as well as text messages. We'll be posting on Twitter and social media. There's a number of things that we'll be doing. And, of course, our principals are messengers directly with families at our school sites as well.
All right. Again, I thank you for your time, Alex. I appreciate you joining us on Insight.
Thank you for helping us spread the word about Thursday.
That is Alex Barrios. He is the communications officer for Sacramento City Unified Schools. Teachers are slated to be on strike tomorrow on Thursday, but as you heard, the schools will be open. The Cap Radio news team will bring you coverage of the strike on air and at capradio.org. Now let's move to another story that has people across the country needing information. In one word, this story is measles. California has had a spike in cases. You might know that there's been a cluster in Butte County, for example. And yesterday in New York City, Mayor Bill de Blasio declared a public health emergency because of at least 285 cases of measles since October. In the studio with me is Dr. Dean Blumberg. He's the chief of pediatric infectious diseases at UC Davis Children's Hospital. He has been busy dealing with families and the media in the past week. Glad you made time to be with us, Dr. Blumberg. Welcome to Insight.
Thank you.
So measles is one of the most contagious diseases of all time.
Yes.
Why can't we get rid of it?
I think you said it in a nutshell. It's because it's so darn contagious. It's one of the most contagious diseases we know. And in fact, in a susceptible population, it'll infect 9 out of every 10 contacts of people. So it's really contagious. And that's what makes it so difficult to eliminate.
Was the U.S., though, able to, for a short while, eradicate it?
Well, we still are on the verge of elimination. The issue is we don't have any indigenous transmission of measles except related to these imported cases that occur. So measles is much more common in other parts of the world. And when people travel there and bring it back and they're still infectious, that's when we get these clusters of measles cases.
We'll get back to that point in a little bit when we talk about some of the state statistics. Meanwhile, can you give me your assessment of the outbreak in New York City in that area?
Yeah, so the outbreak in New York City appears to be driven mostly by some in religious communities who aren't vaccinating. And because of that, because it's so contagious, even if you only have a handful of people within a community who aren't vaccinating, you can still have widespread transmission.
That word outbreak can sound to people like a massive number, but I believe the CDC defines it as three or more cases.
Yeah, three or more cases linked by time or place is the definition of an outbreak. And public health officials take this very seriously. We all take it very seriously because it is so contagious, because it can get out of hand. And so we really want to spend a lot of efforts to limit transmission.
California's largest outbreak was 131 cases, according to the statistics. And a lot of people remember that as the Disneyland outbreak. That was late 2014 into 2015. So what happens then? Does the virus just kind of run its course and the event ends?
If there's nobody else susceptible to be transmitted to, then it does end. And so that's the whole strategy behind these, the control efforts with these outbreaks, is to try to limit transmission, try to find out anybody who's been in contact with an infectious case, make sure they're either immune or if they're not immune, that they are then isolated from potential infectious cases so that we can limit further transmission.
To your point, UC Davis has had an exposure situation.
Right.
Can you specifically explain that and tell me where that has led to in terms of specific cases?
So we had a patient present to the emergency department in mid-March, and that patient was not suspected to have measles at the time. They were admitted to the hospital, and 2 days after they were admitted to the hospital, measles was suspected. At that time, the patient was fully isolated, and we went through to see any potential exposure, any patients that could have potentially been exposed, patients as well as staff. And then we went through and notified them, checked their immunization status, and made sure that the public health authorities were all aware of these patients to make sure that anybody who was potentially exposed and susceptible, that they would be isolated so if they developed symptoms, they wouldn't infect anybody else. And thankfully, as far as I'm aware, we've had no further cases transmitted related to that hospital admission.
And that was a few weeks ago. So
that
any
was
cases
March 17,
would
right?
have emerged by now.
Right. So the incubation period, the time between exposure and development of symptoms, the longest is 3 weeks, and we've passed that. So we believe that we haven't had any secondary cases.
I want to add another person to this conversation right now. He's on the phone. It is Dr. Andy Miller. He is the public health officer in Butte County. And Butte County has had what you could call an outbreak by the CDC definition, a cluster of cases. Dr. Miller, thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Beth.
Can you tell me about the situation with measles in Butte County?
Yeah, we had a Butte County resident who traveled overseas to a part of the world where they're having a large outbreak, and then returned and came into the hospital 3 different times before the diagnosis was made. associated with that initial case, there are 6 cases in our county and 10 if you include some other surrounding counties.
So what do you think is happening? What's your assessment of the pathway of this virus?
Well, your previous speaker, the doctor, has done a great job of kind of describing somebody bringing measles into our community. The analogy I use is it's like dropping a match into leaves, and if that match falls in dry leaves, which is like an unimmunized population, it will propagate and spread. If it falls into wet leaves, which is what immunizations would provide, that match will smolder and likely eventually go out. But it can also find these little pockets of dry leaves and flare up. And so all of the efforts that were described to try to identify contacts, we've done, our health department has done between 250 and 300 contact interviews, and our local hospital has done many, many more to try to identify people at risk, isolate those that need to be, and provide lots of education.
Dr. Miller, there are actual exposure locations in Chico that have been identified. It looks like it was a Chipotle restaurant and a Cinemark theater. So you're getting really specific with people about where and when they might have had contact with the virus.
Yeah, you know, if people are interested, if they look on our Butte County Public Health website, there is a seemingly ever-growing list of locations where people have the potential to have been exposed. It's important to look at that list if you're concerned for yourself, and also look at the time frames, the dates and time frames. Yeah, so when we hear about a case, we do lots of public education on where those cases have been, and then we do a lot of private work behind the scenes trying to assess contacts and put them in high and low risk cohorts, and then treat them appropriately based on their risk, either monitoring them, isolating them, or educating them.
Dr. Miller, would you call this still an expanding outbreak at this point?
I think it has the potential to expand because of the somewhat long incubation period that's already been described. We have to go 21 days after the last case to really feel confident that the outbreak is controlled. So I think the answer is that it's unknown, and lots of people are doing lots of work to see where we are.
It looks like some of this exposure anyway is pinpointed to Sunday, March 31st, but I don't want to limit it to that. I will refer people to links on our website if they want to look at this in more detail. I know you need to get back to a meeting, Dr. Miller. Is there anything else you want to add about the situation in Butte County or measles in general?
Well, you know, I would be remiss if I didn't take advantage of the forum to urge people to get immunized. As has already been mentioned, if a person with measles goes into a room of 100 unvaccinated people, approximately 90 of those people will get measles. If they go into a room of 100 vaccinated people, approximately 3 will get measles, and those cases will be less severe. It's a very, very effective vaccine for lots of reasons we can't go into, but it's really the best and essentially the only tool we have.
And one more question, Dr. Miller. I do want to talk about symptoms. In the UC Davis case, I believe the symptom that presented was a cough. In your cases, are you hearing a common first symptom?
You know, the first symptoms are common, and they unfortunately are not very specific to measles until the rash develops. So they are cough, runny nose, conjunctivitis, which is red eyes, and a fever. Those are the initial symptoms. And as many people know, you can have those with other diseases. It's the rash that usually tunes people into the diagnosis.
Okay. Thanks again for joining us today, Dr. Miller.
Yeah. Thank you.
That is Dr. Andy Miller, Butte County Public Health Officer. I'm continuing my conversation in the studio with Dr. Dean Blumber, Chief of Pediatric Infectious Diseases at UC Davis Children's Hospital. So we did say something about symptoms. Do you want to add to that?
Yeah, thanks. So Dr. Miller did mention that it really can present initially as like a common cold or any community-associated respiratory viral infections. But the challenge with measles is that we won't suspect it really until there's the the rash. And people are contagious 4 days before the rash develops until 4 days after the rash develops. So that makes it really challenging.
Let's listen to some of the press conference from yesterday with New York City's mayor talking about measles.
We cannot allow this dangerous disease to make a comeback here in New York City. We have to stop it now. Today, we are declaring a public health emergency effective immediately. This will mandate vaccines for people living in the affected area. Department of Health will issue violations and fines to people who remain unvaccinated. The only way to stop this outbreak is to ensure that those who have not been vaccinated get the vaccine. It's crucial for people to understand the measles vaccine works. It is safe, it is effective, it is time tested.
I want to get to some vaccine conversation, but what's your reaction about how aggressive New York City is at this point?
Well, I'll just highlight one thing, which is that the mayor mentioned how dangerous it is. So many people will talk about, oh, it's just fever and a rash. But the reason that we're all on edge and taking this so seriously is that measles can kill. And so before we had the vaccine in this country, we had 3 to 4 million cases every year in the U.S. and 400 to 500 deaths every year. With the development of measles vaccine worldwide, more than 1 million lives have been saved every year over the past 20 years. So we take this extremely seriously.
A possible complication can be encephalitis.
Right. 1 out of 1,000 cases can result in inflammation of the brain, which can result in what we call encephalitis, that can result in brain damage for survivors also.
So the measles vaccine is given in what's called the MMR.
Yes,
group.
So that's the measles, mumps, rubella, or German measles vaccine, yes.
And to enter public schools in California, you need 2 doses to be highly effective, but the old standard was 1 dose.
Right. We used to just have 1 dose and think that that was enough, but it was the 1989 through 91 outbreak that we had primarily in California that we realized that 2 doses were better. So 1 dose provides about 97% protection, which is pretty darn good. But with a disease that's so contagious, that's even still not high enough. And so we want 2 doses. That gets us up to about 99% protection.
Looking at the vaccination rates and the number of cases in the state of California in the time period of 2012 to 2017, which includes that Disneyland outbreak, in the majority of cases, there had not been vaccines. But what's obvious is there consistently had been travel out of the country or exposure out of the country.
Right, because measles does occur more commonly in other areas of the world. So we've got outbreaks right now in Ukraine, Poland, France, the UK, as well as the Philippines and Thailand. And so people traveling to these and other areas may bring measles back. And although our vaccination rate in California, overall, it's excellent, but we do get these pockets, these communities that choose not to vaccinate. And that's the real danger, is that when it enters those communities, that's when it can really spread.
I have 2 more questions. Isn't there an entire generation of doctors that essentially hasn't had to treat measles because it had been so eliminated in our country?
We worry about that. We do. I felt fortunate, quote unquote fortunate, that I did see a lot of the measles cases during 89 to 91. So I'm very familiar with how it looks. But the younger generation of healthcare providers may not be as familiar with that. And so we've been doing extensive education among healthcare providers at UC Davis, in Sacramento, in California, and the CDC has done this federally also to try to make sure that people are more aware of it.
And then those conversations with people who are adamantly opposed to vaccinating their children or themselves against this or other diseases. I know you have those conversations. How does that go?
Well, if people are adamantly opposed, then if they're not going to believe the science, then there's really no reason to address it with them, because their minds are not going to be changed. But some people just are hesitant and they're not opposed and they do have concerns. There's been a lot of misinformation via social media and elsewhere. It's really driven by Russian bots and conspiracy theories. And for those people who have heard of those things but aren't opposed to listening to the science behind it, then we're happy to talk with patients and parents about that.
One more question. What about the idea that if enough people around me are vaccinated, I'm safe and don't need to be vaccinated? That phrase, herd immunity?
Right. And that is true. But that's like driving around in your car without a seatbelt or airbags on, because all it takes is one unsafe driver and you can get injured. And so the measles vaccine is not 100% effective. And so even if you're vaccinated, you could still be infected. So I wouldn't try to just rely on herd immunity.
All right. One last point that I want you to make about measles, and that is the midst that we are in with the cluster or outbreak cases here. How worried do we need to be about this as a public epidemic?
I think that public health has a great handle on this. I'm hopeful that we have limited transmission, but I'm still concerned because although measles usually finishes up in the spring and in the early summer, historically, we also know that summer's a peak travel season, and so we could get more introductions as people do international travel and then return, and there could be more introductions in California. So I'm still very concerned.
Dr. Blumberg, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for your information.
Thank you.
That is Dr. Dean Blumberg, Chief of Pediatric Infectious Diseases at UC Davis Children's Hospital. We will post links to information from the state of California and the Centers for Disease Control, the CDC. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio.